Welcome, welcome everyone. Welcome around the United Kingdom and internationally to Bristol's Moves, Keep Bristol Moving, big first event in Bristol. I want to show that like this is an amazing packed out room. Hey! Everyone in Bristol is showing some solidarity to London. No to you, Liz. What are we saying to you, Liz? Because there's a clean air zone that they're implementing in Bristol. They're doing it. They've been doing it in Birmingham. They're doing it with low emission zones in Scotland, but they're not talking to us. Welcome, everyone. We're going to have a big discussion about this. What are we going to do? What do we want to do with democracy, everyone? Take back democracy. What are we going to do?
Take back democracy.
What are we going to do with our streets?
Going
to free our streets together. Now I'm going to hand you over to Chris Johnson, who's organised all of this tonight. Thank you very much, everyone.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming. Before I start, I just want to let you know of a little situation we had when we arrived at the venue. The venue said they had a phone call this morning telling them that the event had been cancelled. Obviously, this wasn't any of us, but I just wanted to point it out to show how childish the people who want to stop us discussing these things actually are and the sort of depths they'll stoop to. So this is a public forum meeting to discuss East Bristol, livable neighbourhood and other restrictions on freedom to move across Bristol. We've organised this meeting in association with Together, who are campaigning nationally on restrictions, ULEZ, CAS, LTNs, LNs, etc. Together is gaining traction in the media and can seriously amplify our campaign across all platforms. We're very grateful for this support, and we would have struggled to have put this meeting on without it. We'll follow the Together principles during this meeting and allow all voices to be heard in a civilised manner, whether we agree or not. Many people in this room will be of the view that the council isn't listening, so let's not follow their lead. As an East Bristol resident myself, who lives just outside the LN, I only found out about the scheme after the consultation process had closed. Myself and a few other people started to look into the scheme in detail, and we were horrified by what we saw. In fact, the more we saw, more we looked at it, the more things we could see that were wrong. The biggest issue for me is that emergency vehicles also use roads. Any traffic management scheme which places physical obstructions in the path of emergency vehicles can only be viewed as dangerous. We hear from supporters of these schemes that they don't slow down emergency vehicles, but I think anyone with a bit of common sense knows that this cannot be true. Hence, starting the Keep Bristol Moving campaign to raise awareness and canvass residents and businesses to find out what they actually think about the scheme. I used to work in Barton Hill and have a lot of affection for the area and its residents. When visiting my favourite chip shop, Hamlin's, a few weeks ago, I was baffled to find the owner knew nothing about the scheme. I can understand he may have missed a letter from the council, but how can the subject of the livable neighbourhood not have come up in conversation in the shop since the project was announced? This suggests that residents and people using the area were not aware either. The consultation process lasted approximately 6 weeks, and it was an online exercise. I believe there were a little over 2,000 responses, which in my opinion is nowhere near enough for a scheme which will not just impact the people who live within the area, but thousands of other Bristol residents and visitors, particularly as the council potentially plans to roll out livable neighbourhoods citywide. Although it's difficult to find details on the overall plan and timing, surely this is something that all residents should be consulted on. I will suggest that the online consultation process was completely unfit for purpose and effectively only consulted the laptop class, which is hardly representative of the area in question. The laptop class may well be able to work from home, may well be able to manage without a car, may well be able to afford rail travel between cities. The working class cannot. There are a large number of elderly residents within the livable neighbourhood who won't be engaging online, and many other residents who speak English as an additional language. The information documents were printed in English only. At the drop-in information sessions, the council team points to their maps and say, access is maintained to all addresses. Now, while this is true, the maps don't show the volume of traffic. So the question is, how much longer will it take people to access the places they need to get to? When I asked about a photo of a padlock bollard and how it would impact ambulances at a drop-in session, I was told, don't worry, they'll have keys. At the walkabout session I went to, if somebody asked an awkward question, they were quietly taken away from the group and an answer was given. The whole process seemed highly choreographed. When looking at the consultation comments, they all seemed aligned, with almost all stating how terrible the air quality was, how bad the traffic is, and how dangerous the driving is. This contrasts drastically with comments made under local press articles regarding the scheme, where over 90% were vehemently opposed to it. How can there be such polar opposite views in two separate public channels? I've also noticed some strange things going on with the consultation website. The comments feature has been turned off and the feedback results have disappeared. Last time I could view the feedback results, there were far, far more people objecting to the scheme than there were those in favour. Why has this functionality been hidden or removed? It feels like the residents have been tricked by the council, having been asked what improvements they would like to see in the area, only to have unannounced road closures forced upon them. Everything about this scheme and the consultation has a very strong smell of stealth about it, and I don't think it could be any less transparent. And so at this point, a man who needs no introduction within these four walls, Mr. Sid Lawrence, is going to speak regarding his experiences with the traffic measures outside his club.
Yeah, hi. Some of you may know me and some of you may not. My name's Sid Lawrence. I'm an ex-Gloucestershire England cricketer. I retired in about, 92, 93 I retired. I then got into business. I then opened a nightclub in the year of 99, and that's on Park Row. So I've been there for about 24 years. Within the last 3 years, suddenly the council, without any consultation to any of us, and it's not just me there, there's probably another 10 shops there, restaurants, hairdressers, cafes, and with no consultation to any of us, they put in a bike lane all the way through. So basically, we cannot now get any deliveries. My delivery guys who deliver, you can imagine, deliver big kegs of beer are refusing to deliver. So that's affecting my business and my livelihood. I've tried to speak to the council about it, about giving us some form of a period when I can, you know, we have 2-3 hours timescale where we can get our deliveries. Even that would be difficult. But nobody seems to want to engage in talking to us. So it's just made my life really, really difficult. And like I said, they don't seem to be wanting to be held accountable. And I think the word is accountable, the council, which I find very disappointing. But they're just making my life really difficult. And what's wrong, I feel injustice about it all, the cyclist, when we double park, because I need to get my out of my car, I have beer, I need to get out of the car. The cyclists then take photos of me, and I know what they're trying to say because they think I'm double parked, but that's the only way I can get my deliveries into my premises. And you've got to remember, there's another probably, I would say, 40 flats above Park Row. So if they want a TV or a washing machine delivered, impossible. So they haven't really thought about it. They haven't sat down with anybody and spoke to any of the residents there to say what our views are. But it's affecting, you know, you've got cafes, restaurants there. You've got a hairdresser. His customers are probably 50, 60% over the age of 60. Now, they need dropping off. So it's like I said, the council are making our lives really impossible, and they're going to threaten people's livelihoods as well. That's what they're going to do. So they need to listen, and they need to be held accountable. I think nowadays in life, everybody, you know, I'm involved with Gloucestershire. I'm their president. We deal with diversity and inclusion. And what I always say, everybody must be held accountable now for their actions. And that's all I've got to say. Okay, thank you.
So our next speaker is Samira from Barton Hill Activity Club. You may well recognise her.
Hi, everyone. My name is Samira Musse. I'm a director of Barton Hill Activity Club. I'm a resident in Barton Hill as well. I'm a mother of two who lives in a tower block. Most of our residents don't speak, their first language is not English, so this consultation wasn't included a lot onto the languages. And it wasn't clear from the beginning that it was in a road closure, the end of the game. All they told us is, we want to improve the area. What do you want to improve the area? And what we asked was safer zebra crossing, lollipop lady for the local school, pharmacy, which we don't have, dentist, improvement to our green spaces, and none of that was considered. So next phase of the consultation, I was involved. Five people went to the second phase of the consultation and later stickers to where they want to close, because we weren't included. So as a resident who lives in the area who takes her child to school that is miles away, because there's not finished school in our area as well. We most dense populated in the whole, I think, Bristol. We live in a tower blocks, and we don't have enough spaces. We have a green space which we need improvement for, but it's not happening. Our green space is empty, and recently we've been told it's going to be given away to a cricket club who's from Gloucestershire or South Gloucester. So whatever we asked is not considered, but the council is just doing what they want to do. So I'm here on behalf of those children, those mothers, those families who's been ignored by the council. And, you know, we say no to road closures. Improvement we want, but not road closure.
Okay, our next speaker is Charles Sterling, who runs Bristol Designs, which is a very interesting tool shop along Park Row.
Hello, I'm another one that isn't right in this area, but have been affected by the Clean Air Zone, by the parking restrictions, by the cycle lanes. It's all part of a similar type of activity. Now, my first thing is, you might have noticed cost of living has gone up. I would guess most of you have. A lot of that is transport. If you have low traffic neighborhoods, if you put in cycle lanes, it all slows down transport. That's putting off cost. So getting deliveries. Now, I've got a secondhand tool shop, antique tools, secondhand tools. An awful lot of my customers can come in, take something away. It may be fairly heavy, so they need to be on transport. A lot of my people bringing tools in to sell me can be disabled. They can be older. Here, what we do, we drive into the cycle lane. I've got people who will pull in at the moment and just stop. Some of them refuse to do that, so they take the tools to the tip. So we're not recycling a lot of things in that case. Now, I look at this area, and trying to work on the map what would happen, I think I broke it down. There are about 13 different segments that are going to be isolated from each other. Might be more, might be less, but it's around 13. In my area, we've got turn restrictions, we've got roads blocked. it's meaning that people have to drive much further. Okay, yes, she's right that the whole of the city centre is being treated as entertainment zone. If you are disabled now, just up the road from me, I've been there for 40 years or 42 years, just up the road from me we have a violin shop or music shop. The owner is disabled. He hasn't been able to get into his own shop for about 2.5 years. He can't park. He will get someone who will double park on the road and let him out of the car. He's done that a couple of times, but he can't. I've got customers that will drive into the cycle lanes. I've got delivery people who will drive into the cycle lanes. But here, and what we will have when they start making it more permanent, you lose all that. So I lose it. From my business, most of my supply comes in from people who are much older. Making the area in central Bristol, what they're calling the entertainment zone, it means you wipe out any business that isn't. And I think they're trying to do the same thing here. If you've got any sort of business that is dealing with people from a distance, a larger catchment area, they're going to be hit. You'll get some businesses that do fairly well. If you're very local and you've only got local customers and local supply, yeah, you're going to survive, you're going to do okay. Now, they hold up in Cottam and up in Clifton. They say it's a great thing. It's worked well for having a pedestrian zone. It works very well if you are very local. If you're not incredibly local, no, it puts on time, puts up your cost. What they're doing here, I think you'll find, if you've got friends in a slightly different zone from you, they're going to be taking extra time to get to you. Now, I had that when I first was in Bristol. I had friends that would come and visit. They started taking away the traffic or taking away some of the parking, put up parking prices. All of a sudden, no, they stopped coming. They wouldn't visit because it was too difficult. And I think you're going to have the same thing here. And it's going to happen in most of these low-traffic neighborhoods that you start isolating people. You start losing those contacts. So socially, they talk about they want to make it more inclusive. What they're really doing is making it less inclusive. They're making it much more difficult. I think I was just going to finish up with saying the consultation. Now, we did have consultation. They basically said, yes, we'll listen to you, but we're not going to change anything. We will only make minor tweaks. And I think you're going to have the same thing here. Yes, when you do get any consultations, just like we had, yeah, we're not going to allow major changes. We'll only allow, okay, you want a green park. It can shift its position by 3 feet. I mean, you're not going to get big changes because, no, they don't want to listen. They've got an agenda of isolating people.
Thank you, Charles. Next up is Justina, who is looking after the React CAS campaign on Facebook regarding the clean air zone in Bristol. Justina.
Hello, everyone. My name is Justine, and I run React CAS campaign against clear air zone charges in Bristol and Bath. Today, I would like to focus mainly on clear air zone issues. I'm not sure if everyone heard about an organization called Client Earth. Well, that organization has won 3 court cases, and the outcome was that UK government had to produce stronger plans to improve air quality. One of the documents published in 2017 called Clear Air Zone Framework states, Clear Air Zone proposals are not required to include a charging zone. Local authorities will need to consider the impact on local residents. They will also need to take action as necessary to support and protect the economy of their local high streets and town centres, whilst ensuring that their clear air zone proposals will not result in displacement of the most polluting vehicles away from town centres to surrounding areas. When we look at Bristol Clear Air Zone, which started on the 28th of November 2022, that's exactly the opposite. So, as we see, central government instructed local authorities to improve air quality in the cities, but the local authorities' approach varies when it's up to the implementing those changes. We all know that we've got clear air zone in Bath, Bristol, Birmingham, Bradford, Sheffield. We've got EULAs in London, but this is not the same situation in all the cities where the clean where they've been instructed to improve the air quality. Derby and Nottingham councils have decided not to go ahead with CAS at all. Leeds acted fast enough to improve public transport and support local people to switch their vehicles to the vehicles which are greener with lower emission. Liverpool and Southampton ease away from charging plans. I hope that you heard about Greater Manchester Clear Air Zone. It's still under review. It should go ahead over a year ago. But thanks to the approach of people and organization called Rethink GM, which transformed into Rethink UK community interest company, they started the legal challenge against local authorities. But they had a massive support from their local MPs and councillors who opposed to charging people. What's happening in London at the moment is very important to all of us. Five councils started the legal action against Mayor of London when it's up to expanding EULAs. In my opinion, we should not ask our MPs and councillors for help. We should ask them to do their job properly. When I mean that they should do their job properly, they should act as people's representatives. We truly believe that improving air quality without putting more taxes, charges, and fines on people is doable. I personally sent the Freedom of Information request to Bristol City Council asking what actions has been taken since 2017 to improve air quality. I didn't get a clear answer to my question. All they said was that all they did didn't work. This is why they've been forced to start chargeable clear air zone in Bristol. Sometimes I think that Bristol City Council and our local authorities here in Bristol, they are just like those three monkeys. Yes. They don't see people. They don't see elderly people, they don't see people with disabilities, they just simply ignore their families, friends, their carers. They don't hear our voices. They don't hear tradespeople saying that they simply cannot afford to upgrade their vehicles. The offered grants are up to £2,000. When you're a plumber, electrician, builder, can you rely on public transport? The answer is no. Can you upgrade your van when someone is giving you £2,000? The answer is no. On top of that, the last monkey doesn't talk. This is how I feel about Bristol local authorities. All MPs, all councillors, and mayors have been invited to attend that meeting. My question is, where are they now? The last thing I would like to say is that there are other solutions to improve air quality. Our money, because we are talking about our money coming from our pockets, should be invested wisely. Not wasted. I feel personally that all the steps taken by Bristol City Council are causing more problems than solutions. Yeah. What Bristol City Council is doing at the moment is trying to convince us that the idea of low-traffic neighbourhoods, it's a brilliant idea, that everyone is capable to reach, let's say, the nearest shop within 15 minutes. They assume that everyone is capable to walk, that everyone is capable to cycle, and they simply don't think ahead. They don't care about people. This is what I think. All they care about is money. So, I've seen a picture saying that estimated time to arrive to the nearest shop or takeaway, it's 15 minutes. But we need to think about estimated time of arrival of emergency services like ambulances or fire rescue. What's going to happen if they put planters and bollards in the middle of the road? Who will take responsibility when emergency services will arrive too late? Because they will be struggling to find a way to get to people who are in need. In my opinion, clear air zone and LTNs are not improving air quality at all. They're causing more problems. They're causing more chaos, confusions, delays, and in my opinion, they're just literally pushing those problems to different areas. Thank you.
I just got to say, everyone, for the live stream, it's so exciting to be, and may I just stand around here for a second because there's a couple of people around there. It's so exciting to be in a room and on a panel. This is who we are. This is Britain. When they want to say that we're complaining about things or we're saying you're imposing these things on us and you're not talking to us and they want to call us names and they want to not talk about the content of the issues and they want to use smears, I would invite whoever does that, whether it's in the press or others that are being crass, to talk to the people, to listen to the opinions of the local residents and businesses and upstanding members of the community and us, we the people. I think that the people that are running things have become contemptuous of the public. They've become managerial technocrats. They think we're all mad, bad and dangerous and stupid and out of control. And we're here tonight and around the country to say we're not going to have that anymore. Now, I do want to say, first I want to say well done to ITV Southwest because they've come and they've come to cover this. And whatever the report ends up saying, I think it's really important because what we need is a proper local, regional and national grown-up adult debate about these issues. About traffic, about housing, about services, about how we're getting about social care, about disability, about how communities can earn more money, can do more things. And yes, surprise, surprise, people want to have a good environment. Absolutely we do. But we don't want shutdowns. We don't want road closures. We don't want to be told we're stupid. Go and sit in the corner, put your hands on your heads. Particularly not in a city, in a region like Bristol, which gave us the first Concorde flight. Bristol, which invented the motorcycle. Bristol, which created Ribena when in the war times there wasn't enough vitamin C and they were worried about scurvy. Bristol that's given us massive attack, right? Bristol and cricket. Bristol that gave us the Eagles. Bristol that's got 111 million in terms of investment of new innovation, bridge building, engineering, architecture, and brilliant creative people that is really about diversity and is showing us the way forward. Now, I want to say that at Together, one of the things that people say, right, when we go around the country is some of the local councillors or national politicians, they say, even the national politicians, well, you're not from round here, we don't need... So they're part of a national political party, right? So if it's Lib Dems or Greens or Labour or Conservative, and they say, well, we don't like your kind round here. What are you talking about? You've got a national organisation. So at Together, we are really proud that we're working with really brilliant, smart people locally and regionally to have a national fight back, to fight back what they're doing nationally with livable streets and active travel and a national cycle campaign. I love cycling, by the way, but a national cycle activist campaign, Sustrans that are doing all the so-called consultations, and they all think we're daft, right? They think we're stupid. They think they can keep imposing these AMPR cameras, these surveillance schemes, these fines, these charges, and we're just going to roll over. Well, we've got news for them, haven't we, Bristol? What are we saying? Now, we're going to come out to the audience in a minute, but I just want to say a few things, right? We have seen around the country amazing things, right? Caroline's at the back. We did an event recently in Bath. Again, they tried to cancel us and shut us down in Bath. And within 4 days, we had a packed hotel room this time, right? Because they were too scared to allow us to have a conversation, like the jokers that phoned up today and said, oh, it's been cancelled. What we would invite anyone, because you've got a lot of money and you've got all these platforms, you're telling us it's another emergency and we have to do it right now and be quiet, right? We would invite you to have a proper discussion and debate and thrash out the issues. But if you're going to talk to us about 15-minute neighbourhoods and about low-traffic neighbourhoods and a better quality of life, we would say, build better houses, let's get better incomes for people, and let's have better service provision. If you start with all that, that's for a starters, then we can have a discussion about lots of other things and if we really can do that within that area. But we have never agreed to give up our rights for mobility and our rights for freedom. We're not going back to the feudal times. Now, I'm not going to say too much, right, but I will say one thing. It's very interesting, right, that we've got today, Keir Starmer is saying that now, all of a sudden, he thinks it's a good idea to pause the ultra-low emission zone that Sadiq Khan has just imposed on everyone, mainly because they want to win the election in Uxbridge, and they're petrified that lots of, surprise, surprise, decent, ordinary people, Labour voters, many of them for life, and other voters, independents, Conservatives, do not want you, Liz. They know it's going to attack working people. 50% of vans outside of London and inside. And now they're panicking. And they're saying, let's have a pause. What, a pause till you've had the election and then you're going to go and do it anyway? We're not going to fall for all that stuff. You've got to treat people with respect as grown-ups and engage honestly. And I think it's really important that we address those issues as they stand. Now, I want to give you a couple of examples, because I think in this meeting, what will be really good is, as well as hear these voices, and I hear from all of you and we discuss this, is to have some practical outcomes, right? We need to get organised. We need to get videos from people locally talking about these sorts of things, about how this is damaging businesses, damaging mobility, having an impact, as the woman was saying, quite rightly, right? Or a disability and other people. And what we found is in other cities, like in Cowley Road in Oxford, they wanted us to call us names there as well, but when they saw all the people that were making videos and where they were from and what they'd done to Cowley Road and transformed it and made it better, and they're getting shut down, then it connects with hearts and minds locally, right? People see the videos. In the same way, we've seen that in Bath. We've seen that up and down the country in Haringey, Hackney. We've seen it in Cambridge. People are challenging what's going on. And what I find is, usually the people that are speaking here are far more well-informed, very well-intentioned, really connected with the local community. And I think the local council needs to take notice. And bear in mind, most local councillors get voted in by a few hundred votes. And just to say, everyone, right, there was just a by-election in Oxford. 3 weeks there was a run-up to it, and an independent stood up. Now, Labour put all of its resources into that because it was about low-traffic neighbourhoods. They brought Annalise Dodds down. They had 50 campaigners. And in the end, and the flyer of the independent was stopped for a week, right, on a technicality. In the end, there were 1,100 votes, 1,104 to 1,003. So they won by about 100 votes. Now, if people get organised and decide to, in local elections very badly attended, but we've got a general election coming up, we should make all our MPs and local councillors very acutely aware. We should draw them out and say, where do they stand on this? And if they're not going to stand up for the local community, they're going to be out on their ear.
Now, my name is Tara Hawkins.
I'm just going to play one video. We've got loads of videos, and you should have a look at togetherdeclaration.org. We'd love to have you as members and sign up, as well as be involved with Bristol Moves. We're a national organisation, but this is about coordinating and having a 360 approach. What we mean by that is, when you've got all these slick adverts, when you've got all this money that is our money that we've given, the government have taken, local authorities have taken, and they're our money to tell us what's best for us, that we get organised and we get campaigning and we get a national movement going with local hubs and regional ambassadors, with leaders and people are going to do it. And we'd invite everyone to get involved with this. But this is Tara Hawkins, who's based in Haringey, in a street that for 150 years has serviced local people. Then the low traffic neighbourhood came in. Haringey Council weren't interested in listening. In fact, Mike Hercarter in Haringey Council, also only got voted in by a few hundred votes, said, we're going to make it, listen to this, it's dripping with contempt, we're going to make it as painful for everyone as possible, because they know what's best. Now, listen to Tara Hawkins and what she says, because I think this is the sort of thing we can do to win over some hearts.
My name is Tara. Top in Middleton Road, North London, which is along a high street in the borough of Haringey. I run two businesses from my shop. One is a travel agency, which was hit during the COVID times, and the other is a consignment business specialising in homewares, furniture and clothing, which actually started during COVID times and was doing really well. So well that in spring of last year, we took a second shop in the high street to expand into. However, in August 2022, Haringey Council slapped an LTN around our high street. This had an immediate impact on our business, which saw a drop in revenue of around 15 to 20%. Why did that happen? Because we don't rely on just customers coming from the local area to shop in our high street. We're a destination high street, and customers were coming from outside the area and outside the borough to shop in our street. So overnight, Haringey Council changed the business model. And this was done with no consultation with the businesses. As a result of this, we returned our second shop that we were expanding into, and we told the landlord of our main shop that we were not going to renew the lease. So by the end of this month, January 2023, we will be out of the high street. So within 4 months, Haringey Council have pushed us out. And it's not just us that this has affected. As co-chair of the Traders Association of Middleton Road, there are 68 shops in this high street. We surveyed those shops in December 2022. 75% of them responded. 87% of them said that their business had been significantly impacted by the introduction of the LTN. 75% of them said that they were looking to relocate or close their business within 18 months because of the introduction of the LTNs. So LTNs, we didn't vote for them. They've been put in undemocratically. We are actively campaigning to remove them, and we will actively campaign against those that vote for them.
So I'm just going to say that we've just launched a coalition to stop you, Liz, with all the different political parties and independents that are challenging opposing it, regardless of their political views more broadly, that are saying they are not going to stand by and have these impositions met. When sometimes we're made to feel as though there's nothing you can do, what is my voice going to do? I'm only this, and people become cynical. Understandably, right, there's a parallel set of lives with these metropolitan kind of elected people that really think that they all know better and they never listen and the public's not engaged. We're here to send them a message that those times are finishing now. We are going to reorganise ourselves. We're going to stand together. Even if we don't agree on everything, we're a broad umbrella to say the public has to have our voices heard. Not only around ULEZ and CASIS and RPZs and the Ring of Steel. Imagine that name, Ring of Steel in Bath. But low traffic neighbourhoods, 15-minute neighbourhoods, our streets, our people. We're going to free our streets together. We're going to force them to listen. And if they don't, they should move out the way. Because it's time now that we all stand together. We're going to have some solidarity and we're going to change. The times are changing. I'm looking forward to hearing what all of you say. We're going to free our streets together. We're going to take back democracy. What we're going to do, everyone. Thank you very much.
Now we're going to throw it open to the floor and ask for questions, etc. So if we can have a show of hands. Are we
going up to the either people with the mic?
Yeah. Hi everyone, my name's Steve Smith. I'm going to put my head above the parapet a little bit because I am a councillor on Bristol City Council. Before you start throwing things at me, I'm an opposition councillor. Well, I'm not going to talk about party politics, that's not the point tonight. But suffice to say, I'm not here to defend the council policies. I'm not here to defend the mayor or anything like that. The message I do want to say, though, is that, yes, let's organise, let's campaign, let's try and change the policy at the big council level, at national level. But at the really local level, in each individual ward around Bristol, if local residents work with their councillors, and means having a councillor that's willing to work with you, you can make a difference. You can push back on this stuff. I've done it. I'm a councillor for Westbury on Trim and Henley, so I've crossed the other side of the city. I mean, yeah, so fairly affluent sort of area, but it's an area that's got one of the oldest populations in the city, and we're out on the edge of the city, so a lot of people rely on their cars. We had a scheme put out a few years back now. The council did the usual thing. Engineers sat in a bunker for a couple of years. We knew something was going on. We knew there was a scheme coming. We asked them to come and talk to us. Nothing. Eventually, this scheme was published. They told us about it as councillors on Friday afternoon. They published it on Monday morning. That was it. And it came out then it was the usual sort of consultation. We've already done it. It's a finished design. Do you love it or do you like it? That was kind of the thing. So we organised with our residents. And working together with our residents, we organised meetings, we organised protests, we organised objections going in. We got thousands of objections in, mainly by just raising awareness. People didn't know this was happening. We raised the awareness. We got the objections in. And by working together, it wasn't just the three of us councillors, but by working together with all of the residents in the area, 95% of that scheme was chucked out. And it can be done. It can be done.
And now they're going to build on it, all these houses. How can we trust councillors? How can we actually trust local politicians? The government is corrupt as you like. The meadows, nature reserve, Marvin Reserve, it's not going to be built on. It's being built on now, historic.
Yeah.
How can we trust these people?
Yeah, well, like I said, on that. Yeah, it was called the A4018 Improvement Scheme. And it was a whole, they wanted to block off the centre of Westbury Village and the whole no left turn here, no right turn there, all that kind of thing. It's still ticking along, it will come back, but, you know, we won the battle. No, I don't cover Southampton. So, to your point, sir, I'm not here to defend Marvin and the decisions he's made. I sit across the aisle from him, let's put it that way. But in terms of how you can trust people, what I would say is there's a local election coming up in Bristol next May. All right. In every ward, I'm sure people hear from all over the city, ask the people who want to be your councillor in your ward where they stand on this stuff. Ask them if they will support you and use your vote accordingly. And if they don't, well, okay. Yeah, yeah, I know. All right, and then, yeah. Yeah, no, that's all right. It's fine. I get people are cynical. Of course you are. Why wouldn't you be?
Right, thanks, Steve. I think we probably want to move on to...
Of course.
Thank you very much indeed. Yeah. If anyone who's got questions or who would like to make a comment, please make your way down to the front to one of our stewards who've got the microphones, please.
Is it ready? Hello, I'd just like to agree with the lady that all politicians are monkeys. They've got no original thinking. The idea of 15-minute cities has come from the World Economic Forum. This is nothing about clean air. It's all about the god of climate change and net zero. So it's nothing to do with clean air. It's just to control people, minimise their travel. Oil is actually a scarce commodity. It's becoming harder and harder to take oil out of the ground. It's costing more. So it's nothing but a scheme to keep the wealth in the hands of few by forcing everybody else not to drive and emotionally blackmailing us with the climate. Is it 10 years to live? 5 years to live for the planet? How many times have we heard it? Al Gore, Prince Charles, now King Charles? All of them. So they're all liars, to be honest. Yeah. So that's the issue.
Hi, I'm Helen McBride and I live in the Redfield area. I just want to read out a comment from a local chat group that I'm in. So one of the residents went to one of the meetings for the planning of the road closures and he said that the funding for change is coming from outside funds. I wonder if they're keeping some back to reverse these changes, or will we then pay for that out of the council tax? He found that Eastern rejected their residential plan, and it would be interesting to find out how that all panned out. He said he was definitely up for a positive change, but it was evident today in that meeting that planners didn't really know how the change would impact the community in the wider area. They kept stating it's a trial. They didn't even consider that Blacksworth Road only turns right because they'd suggested that the residents that live down by the Netham to get to their houses, they could come up the road and turn left into Church Road, but they didn't actually know that. Something else he said. One planner pointed out that the deliveries for the purple area residents, I don't know if you've seen the maps with the different colour coding. I then asked him if he has seen Byron Street, which he hasn't. I live on that road. I showed him a video of Byron Street and the skip truck reversing, the tight gap between the cars, as the skip couldn't get up there, and also pointed out the huge camber. He had no idea, yet he was the main design planner. I kindly pointed out that surely this was a problem.
Anyone else who would like to... Okay. Do you want to come down the front or should we come to you? Or?
Yeah, hello. I found myself to be right in the middle of the trial area, so I'm taking this a little bit personally. I'm a delivery driver and, of course, we work out our routes by being as efficient as possible to minimise time to get around the area. it's quite obvious that now that they're going to try and block off neighbourhoods and we can only access them from the main road, we're going to be wiggling around the city and taking a lot longer. So it cannot be possible that these systems, these trials are going to reduce emissions. That just doesn't make sense. I did go to a drop-in session. I managed to speak to a young man from the council who said he was the project manager for this. I tried to push him on a few points, particularly saying, where does this come from? It's not coming from the people. This is not democratic. Where does it come from? He did try to not answer. Eventually, he sort of said something about, we've been planning this for a long time. I don't know who the we is. And eventually saying something about Labour, the Labour Council. A couple of points I picked up at that session that I find absolutely amazing. Maybe somebody can confirm. He said the council is planning to increase the population of Bristol by 500,000 people in the next 10 years. So I said, well, that's your problem. How are we going to reduce emissions if we're going to double the population? That's the problem. If that's your plan, then you're the problem. But, you know, nothing else. All these schemes will not reduce emissions, whatever we do. So if that's true, that's terrible. He also said that they're trialing them, then they'll consult on the trials, and they want them permanent in 2027, which I understood to mean across the whole city. It could have just been our neighbourhood, but I understood that across the city. So that's a couple of figures that I thought were interesting. In terms of the whole process, which I'm just amazed that the councillors were not involved. I mean, what are the councillors for if they're not involved? I don't understand that. Exactly. So as what I now see as a prelude to this sinister scheme, just if I may give an example on my street, I'm just off Church Road. I used to be able to go to the end and turn right or left. And that road at the end connected all the side streets. It was very convenient. You just go in the direction that you want. They've now blocked off, a couple of years ago, a short section of only 150 metres in front of the school, saying it was about the school and it was about making that area safer and quieter. And they consulted on this plan. And on the first day the consultation came out, I responded. And I saw that the consultation was a complete fraud. They didn't ask if the changes, this blocking of one section of the road, which now meant that I cannot turn left, no one can turn left, we'll have to go the other way. Whatever direction we're going, we have to go all the other way and round. They only asked about the impacts on that little section. So the questions were, will that little section of road be quieter? Well, of course. Will it be safer? Of course. Less pollution? Of course. They didn't ask or care about the whole area. So they didn't care what the impacts were as a whole. So it was a setup. It was a fraud. And I feel quite upset about that. It is not proper. It's not proper. It's so I feel it's bullying.
Sorry, I was just the lovely lady that was talking earlier about you know, someone talking to the planners about have they been to the street that I live on, which is Byron Street. And he hadn't, and he was the main design planner. I then pulled out a video and showed him a skip going backwards and told him about the fire on my street once, and the fire brigade turned up and they couldn't come up our street because they would have to smash all the cars. So they had to literally run up our street and service this fire. And this is going to be the main street for the purple area, which is near Barton Hill on the end of Victoria Avenue. But one of the main things I want to point out is my son goes to Redfield School, which is just on the end of Victoria Avenue. And the orange residents of the map, which are between Victoria Avenue and Neatham Park, have four different access areas to get into that area and out. And they've decided that they're going to take away three, and the only access they're going to get from Church Road to their neighbourhood is on Avonvale Road, which is right next to my son's school. And I had a look at their website, and they do have stats on traffic flow throughout a neighbourhood. And I just pointed out that the thick purple line going along Church Road and Feeder Road, there's a lot of pollution, a lot of traffic. But actually, in our neighbourhood where we live, and right next to the school, the pollution and the traffic level's pretty low, especially since the school stopped the road, blocked the road in the morning and the afternoons. I've noticed it's not a shuttle run anymore. The only people that actually really use it as a rat run are us, we're the only people that actually know it's there. You don't get many chances, really, going through those streets unless they actually know how they're going to be used. And so he suggested that because we're blocking three of the routes, then these people won't come through that community and use Avonvale Road as a rat run. Anybody that lives there knows Avonvale Road is a rubbish rat run because any traffic on Church Road will just block that road. The light's only gone for a few seconds. A couple of cars go out at best when the traffic's low, when it's, you know, quite a lot of traffic, and now we're channeling everybody through that avenue. It's going to be really bad. I spoke to someone at the school today. She had the map in front of her, actually, funny enough. And she said they had been consulted with. So I said to her, but do you know about what's going to happen? And she had no idea. She had no idea. And they have an obligation to our kids, legally. And that route is going to be a big, thick line. So, you know, and obviously... God, I can't... I'm
concerned.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not opposed to change. I think we have a chance of £6 million. Eastern Community Centre had the same chance. They had maximum disruptive elements coming in. People obviously didn't want to go down that route. And they've lost £6 million. We may lose the same opportunity if we just combat it. What we need to do is think of a different proposal. Talk to the people on the street. Talk to the tradesmen. I work around that community so much because I'm brave enough to work within my community. I'm reasonably good at work. I'm a plaster, by the way, if anybody needs any help. And I talk to the community, the Eastern community, the Lawrence Hill community, everybody around where we live, and this scheme is not right. But I'm not saying that something shouldn't be in place. I think Victoria Avenue should just have, like, the Audi-style strips at the end, just because it's now one way near the school. That will stop the odd person going up there. I've been doing a count of cars coming down. You get the odd... There's not a lot now, but you do get the odd person speeding, a couple of planters. Actually, most of that funding most probably should go towards the Lawrence Hill area and make it better down there. We don't kind of need it up where we are. And also, in the Lawrence Hill community, there are a lot of drivers there. There's a lot of cars there. There's a lot of taxi drivers there. Some of the information I've been seeing put out on some WhatsApp groups have said... opposite, like basically they don't have the money to have a car is kind of how they put it. I don't know how to word that properly, but it's not right. Just walk down that road, look at all the cars, listen to the people in the community. They have cars, they have a voice, and this is going to disrupt their lives just as much. Okay. We may lose a whole load of people who are on the fringe of trying to save our planet and do the right thing. And if we lose them this time, we'll lose them
okay,
forever.
Let's move along, let someone else speak. Thank you very much.
Hi, I work at Rank Engineering on the Botten Hill Trading Estate. There's a profound irony in this whole scheme, is they're attempting to create a livable neighbourhood in one of the most deprived areas of Bristol, where there is not actually a livable neighbourhood. The population are crying for a GP surgery, pharmacy, and they're just literally completely basic amenities, and they're just ignoring it. The whole scheme, the statistics that are collected are pseudo-statistics. They're not representative whatsoever. The map would fail GCSE geography. It hasn't even got an appropriate key. It screams of trying to make the Barton Hill area a subsidiary of the University of Bristol, and it doesn't represent the people who live there. It is extremely coercive, and it's trying to force people to live in the way in which they want them to live, not listening to the folk.
I'm from the East Bristol, but I live in Tottenham. Scheme sort of shutting people out is really distressing for me. My doctors are still in St George because of medical reasons, and I'm stressed out all the time. I had to sell a car because it was a Toyota Yaris and I couldn't drive this car, so I had to get another car at massive expense.
they're making out sort of we have this East Bristol livable neighbourhood, but that's my childhood home. That's where my friends live. That's where I grew up. That's where my friends from childhood live. They live in the Redfield area. I've got PTSD. I go to the Netherm and I sit and I do sort of just connect back to where I'm from, and that's important to me. And I feel like I'm being shut out. And it's kind of like just consulting with the people that live within that area. It's not just within that area. It's people that identify with that area as home.
A hand up over there, I think.
I live in Borden Hill, and there was a fire in my block 2 years ago. If the fire brigade couldn't get there today, I would be dead now. And I can't get down the stairs. I got disability in my legs. I cannot get downstairs. It took me 45 minutes to get down the stairs in my own block. So if the fire brigade couldn't get to my block now, I'd be dead even now. Thank you very much.
Hi there. I'd like to address the issue of disabled people. How are we supposed to get around? I mean, I saw a disabled man... I saw a disabled man being interviewed on Newsnight a couple of nights ago from London, where this scheme had started. It costs him £7 a day to get out of his area so he can go to the hospital, meetings, or whatever. £7 a day just to get out of his area. Is this what's going to happen to us? Because so far, money's not been mentioned, but they kind of put that thing onto you at the very last moment, just like this scheme. Also, I live in Redfield, right by the Netherm. We haven't got any youth clubs. We haven't got anything in the area. I even tried to contact the council recently about the Netherm Pavilion that they built, hoping that maybe we could have a cafe at the side or something. We've got local musicians that came out in lockdown, and it was a really nice atmosphere by the people themselves, with nothing opening, nothing available to us. So when you try and ask the council for anything, they just refuse or say it belongs to the sports council, don't give you a name to write to, none of it. Just full stop, that's it, we're not interested. That's all I got to say.
Thank you. There was a hand up over here a minute ago. There's a few hands up over there. Excellent.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Ibrahim Hussein. I'm representing Tawfiq Masjid and Center. First of all, I would like to define the whole program, and I will say is undermining, lowering expectation and earning zone. First of all, that's the definition I will give them. And if that is the case, we say no, we want to live in a better life, and the whole testimony is the people who are gathered here. So what I'm saying is, if there is anybody in around this evening who is among those people who have drawn up this particular, I will say shame on you, because you can see the number of the people. Secondly, I would like to say that this program has not been consulted widely, as being said, everybody. And it affects everybody rather than helping. What we need is to improve social mobility. Yes. And one way of improving will be to consider how do you expect improve the life, the earning of the people, their life. Think of if they are thinking that in the middle of we, like 2 o'clock, they can summon somebody to open up that gate, that barrier, and open for the ambulance or the emergency. Think of somebody who's trying to save his elderly, disabled person, his young children, who has got maybe cannot suffocated or have a poor health condition. Imagine the difference it can make. driving around 15, 30 minutes to go to the emergency, BRI emergency, or to go to where you want. Other than that, this, the whole of this scheme is just undermine people and to put them down in terms of earning, in terms of expectation, and in terms of everything. So I will say, if there's anybody who's representing the council or anybody from higher up, let them stand up and tell us. And I will kindly, first of all, I will thank the ITV or whoever is here to come, whoever came here to represent and air this view. We are asking all the TVs, BBC, other people. This is a very important that touches the life of the innocent, the life of poor people. So we ask everybody to rise up and challenge this thing. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think we've got time for about one more.
Okay, thank you.
We'll go back out for some more questions after, but one more for a moment.
My name is Errol Campbell. I don't know if anyone here from Beaufort Road? I live on Beaufort Road, and listening to everyone here today, there's always winners and losers. And I came here today with some questions to ask, and having heard what people have said, how it's impacted their lives, my thinking has shifted slightly. But we can't pretend there are no problems. I've lived on Beaufort Road for 28 years. And that road has caused us enough problems trying to raise children on that road. The amount of accidents that have taken place on that road. The amount of road rage that takes place on that road. And especially if anyone knows Beaufort Road, there is a junction there that if the police were documenting it, there'd be no enough accidents there to raise our car insurance, because the insurance company says the amount of accidents there. My question is, how do you deliver on the difficulties that people have living on Beaufort Road? The suggested trial scheme for us works, okay? You can say we're selfish because it works for us. And listening to what's being said is obviously one man's gain is another person's detriment. So while we're saying, and I agree with you, if it impacts somebody's business, then something has to be done. But there has to be solutions to problems. They can't be ignored. So, yeah, I'm still asking the question, and some of our folks on there are asking, how are you going to solve our problem? Okay?
I think anyone who knows the area, anyone who's familiar with the area and knows where Beaufort Road is, will know that it is a problematic street. I don't think anybody would argue that Beaufort Road has some issues which could do with addressing. The same thing with Mildred Street in Barton Hill. Mildred Street is very much a road which has issues. But our argument is that this scheme is not the solution to one or two roads which have problems. Those problems can be dealt with in isolation. This scheme is a very, very blunt tool to try and address those issues. What we've always done historically is when roads have issues with traffic, we've looked at that road in isolation and worked out a solution for that particular street. But because there's one or two roads which are notorious within that huge, it's about 2 square miles, isn't it? Something like that. For me, certainly the solution is not the scheme which has been offered, which causes so much pain, to the whole neighbourhood.
But if you say you're talking, you're accusing the council of not talking. Now, if I come to you, I've got to have a solution. That's how you Sorry, that's how you solve the problem. You can't solve the problem by saying, we don't want this, we don't want this.
Yeah, yeah, well, okay. What I'm saying is, yeah. is if you have a, if you have an issue with traffic on a road, you deal with that road. You know, you don't deal with 2 square miles.
I am not saying that, but for 28 years we've been living with this, okay? 28 years. So we've had meetings, and people on Beaufort Road and nearby have agreed to certain things. And I hold my hand up and saying that what has been suggested for Beaufort Road does impact on other people. But if you want to get rid of the scheme, you've got to put something else in place. You've got to suggest something. Okay. Now, sorry. Can I?
I was going to come back on. Now, that I think it's a really important.
Point. Can I make a point? Make a point. I wish I wouldn't have to say this. Building roads and road schemes, okay, was part of my forte, okay, as a civil engineer. So I know what it is like to think about all these things, about the pollution and so forth. But you've got to suggest solutions.
Absolutely. Okay? I think it's a really good point. And I think what that gentleman has pointed out is something that's really important, that's very crucial, which is that whenever we do anything in a city, in urban planning, there are always some consequences, and we have to think about if there's issues, how we mitigate them. The question is, how do we organise it? What's the first principle? When we thought about getting rid of the ghettos and having better social housing and having improved stock and innovating and transforming things, when we have irrigation, when we have tunnelling, when we have bridges, it used to be the case that much of the public was at the heart of those considerations. How can we have more trade and commerce? How can people have better housing and education? And let's think about post-war, when we had things like provisions after 2 world wars and a huge recession. There was a big concentration on how we could improve things. Every kind of movement, from the Bauhaus movement to the modernist movement, there were mistakes made, but it was about putting people at the heart of things. The problem is now is that the public is not front and centre. The way to solve the problem, and it's like around some schools, right? There are very good, strong arguments for some roads where there are schools to have slower driving, right? I don't think anyone's going to say, well, we always have to have 70 miles per hour like you have on the motorway everywhere, right? Because we can be nuanced, we can use our judgment, and we can have significant big urban planning schemes, which we have civil engineers and we have planners and we have the public at the heart of it. But it has to be not just social engineering with a view that we're at a permanent crisis. You've got to have net emissions, net zero. That means we're going to have shutdowns, we're going to have restrictions, we're going to have limits. Why not have the starting point, what we need? Let's have some ambition and around how we can provide the best for everyone in a city. How can we have fantastic schools, great infrastructure, brilliant hospitals, not water companies that are pumping pollution into the water, not infrastructure that's really old that's not being invested in, not laying off people or paying them really poorly. How about we put the public front and centre and we say our needs and our interests, and yes, local input around where there are problems, where there are fissures, but not having this new kind of zone-ism where you say that's going to happen there across the board. They're all trials that we've heard. They're all trials, but by the way, each trial depends on the next one. And then we're going to impose it across the board, because what we've seen behind all of this, when you take the veil away, there's a plan. There is a plan. And the plan, as Ken Livingstone said a long time ago, if I can get rid of cars, I will. And as we've seen the C40 cities and the mayors around the world and in this country, and as we've seen local authorities increasingly around these livable streets and active travel, the idea is you should walk. A bit like 40 years ago they did in China. You should cycle everywhere. Well, what about if you've got to do deliveries? What about if you are disabled? What about, you know, my mum happens to be disabled now. It takes me 4 times the amount of time to go and see her. I've now got to move from where I am to be around her. The councils don't care. People are nearly kicking off in the street, but they actually like that. Because the more that they can make it painful for ordinary people, the more they can implement those measures. And I'm fully, I think we're, I think We need to have more brains and attention locally on some of the issues, and but what we need to do is we need to be able to have a proper discussion where people are consulted and listened to. The gentleman's been there a long time and he's very well aware of what's going on, and there needs to be issues. But you need to be able to have a very specific local, regional and national plan, of which at the heart of it is what the British public needs. Not what they say at Davos. Not what they say when they fly in their nice jets and they go in air-conditioned limousines and then tell us how much we've got to stop driving and consuming because we're all these like avaricious, nasty termites. But actually, what do we need in our streets, right? And how are we going to get them done? We need infrastructure. We need some reservoirs, right? We ain't built any forever. How about some nuclear energy, right? Let's have proper electrification. Let's not keep saying we're killing everything, we're destroying everything, it's all us when they're... And let's get the conversation back. And what I would really like to see tonight is as many people, as many of you, because this is an electric audience, come and see Chris and the guys afterwards. Get involved, right? If you want to have your voices heard, let's get organised. Let's make sure we've got all sorts of things. Bring neighbours, friends, work colleagues. Get them involved with us, right? Let's have some more rallies. Let's do door-to-door. Let's get calls to action to councillors and MPs. Let's make sure they hear Bristol loud and clear together.
If you know any councillors, you know, the people that...
Speak into the mic.
Bristol City Council. If you know any... And I know there's one here, and obviously you know quite a lot more. A lot of them don't seem to know what's going on. So if you know anyone, tell them what's going on. Yeah. I haven't been to many of the council meetings myself, but I've heard from people that have that they don't know what's going on, and they should do because they're councillors. They're just like, oh, you know, oh, the 15-minute cities, they're wonderful. What a wonderful idea. They won't, people have better conditions to live in. And it's completely off track. So I'm just saying, if you know any councillors, just let them know what you know. Thank you.
Hi, just to say, if anybody's interested, we have a demo on Saturday the 15th of this month. So we're meeting at St. George's Park.
Stand up.
And it's going to start at 11:30. So we're just going to go around the area, talk to people, basically try and alert people and spread the knowledge, basically. Right?
Thank you.
I think we have to say very loud no to this scheme. No to this scheme. Because it is based on lies. How can anyone tell me, how can you impose a scheme without consultation, without proper consultation? Look, only those who live in those areas know, you know, when you close off Marsh Lane, you know, when you close off partially Avonmill Road, the whole traffic will go either Feeder Road, St. Philip's, and Lawrence Hill Church Road. That you are causing basically more traffic. More traffic means more pollution. Thus, you are not helping. You are causing more problems. Look. In my community, you have lots of taxi drivers. But also, you have a bigger families that is well known in Bristol. This scheme is going to impact us more than anyone else. Yes. We said 3 days ago no, and we are saying now no.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, I haven't actually been to a meeting like this before, and I'm really pleased to hear all the different people's opinions, because they are different. And what I'm not understanding, or sorry, what I would like somebody from the top table to explain, because I don't know the process, is how, after we've done all of the meetings, the events, going out and campaigning against it, how we actually get the people that make the changes listen to possible solutions that the people that live there box and make.
Hi. I work in Barton Hill with a local community organization, and I have heard the concerns that the local community are raising, whether that's the businesses or the local residents. And I think it's all about honest and being transparent, and the council hasn't been honest and transparent from the beginning. I think they had their own, you know, hidden agenda to start with. What they call livable, it was some kind of, you know, deceiving. I think everybody wants us to live in a life which is, you know, green and healthy, but the way they approached it was kind of like a, you know, imposing of what they wanted, rather than consulting people in an honest and, you know, and transparent way. Because I have seen the what they called, you know, a survey or what they called consultation. There was nothing or nowhere mentioned about the road closures. That is, you know, it was just they used the what they called, you know, the consultations as a tick box.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, it was not a genuine, you know, consultation. I think, you know, if they would have been honest in the beginning and, you know, saying, okay, we are using a government power because we have power, we are imposing on your power, and at least if they could ask, you know, the local community, is there any room that we can negotiate with, people could have at least, you know, have designed, co-designed something that is maybe a win-win for all. However, you know, I don't think what they're doing is, you know, is completely disgenuine.
Unethical.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I think, you know, they need to, they need to stop what they're doing and restart the process, consult. There are a lot of pressing issues, you know, in the community. As many people said, you know, there's no pharmacy. You know, there's no, even the local, you know, the dentist is moving, you know, from NHS to private. You know, the public transport is very poor. You know, there are a lot of, you know, pressing issue to address in terms of, you know, the street lighting, making the streets the better place, creating a cycle line while not dismantling, you know, the car routes. You know, there are a lot of things to that the community has mentioned that they need. But I think this is imposing rather than, and the irony is that they called co-production or some kind of like, I can't find words, but I think it's completely unacceptable.
Solutions. I sit here and I've almost forgotten the glaring solution. Because in this country, we've forgotten the obvious solution to extreme mobility on cars and the problems that they can cause, and it's public transport. Over the past few decades, we've had our railways run down. They've become expensive and unreliable. I had to give up using GWR because I just couldn't get to work using them. Bus services are run down, and they've been cut in Bristol and in London recently, and nobody talks about it. And if you do mention it, you're often told it's too expensive, it's too complicated. We are an advanced society. We're supposed to be one of the richest countries in the world, and we have created a society which depends on mobility. So if we want to think about solutions, and if we want to get our politicians thinking about solutions, we need to get public transport back onto the agenda.
Yeah.
Hi there. I used to live in Bristol. I commuted for about 15 years by bike and by bus and on foot and by car. I agree with the last lady about public transport. I don't know if First still only do a policy of no return ticket before 9 o'clock in the morning. It made it impossible for me to do several jobs in the town centre. It just wasn't economically viable, so I'd agree with her on that. What the solution to that is, I don't know. But one of the solutions I haven't heard, really, apart from the chap at the top table, mentioned Davos. I think one of the things that people really need to do to get ahead of all of these problems is understand the bigger picture of what's going on. Yeah. Where nobody yet has mentioned UN 2030, and there's also the Great Reset, which a lot of people say, oh, that's just a conspiracy theory. Of course it's not. And a lot of people, the members of the public, don't know about these things. It's not on the BBC. They don't talk about it. There's very little in the way of public knowledge. I'm guessing from the response, a lot of people here do know about those things. But I think what we need to do is focus on the big picture and see how those top-level agendas are filtering down through and how our councils are not democratic. As you say, take back democracy. I also used to work for Bristol City Council for a couple of years as well. And I've seen that, how top-level agendas filter down through and lesser agendas are just immediately swept aside. There's a sort of hierarchy in terms of interests. And very often those interests are corporate. They're not. It's got nothing to do with the service they're bringing. It's to do with profit. And, I mean, that's kind of my point, really. And I don't know how we approach it. I really don't. I'm kind of at a bit of a loss myself these days.
Okay, thank you very much. I think we've got time for a couple more.
I'd just like to add to that the gentleman there said, the bigger picture is the council are portraying that we need to reduce CO2. We do not need to reduce CO2. CO2 at the moment stands at 0.04% parts per million. When it gets to 0.02, the trees start dying.
Hi. Sorry, I just wanted to say can I talk? Yeah, a few things. I just want to speak on behalf of the faith community, because one thing I've realised, being from a Muslim background, no one seems to have talked to any of the mosques and how they'll be impacted by this. So if you just look at, for example, you know, as Muslims, we go to the mosque 5 times a day to pray. A lot of our elderly, that's the only social contact they get sometimes. You take away their ability to get to the mosque, they're going to lose that, yeah? And then if we look at Friday prayers, for example, yeah, we normally get like maybe 300-500 people going to Friday prayers on a Friday. And a lot of those people, they're trying to get there during their lunch break. Again, you take away their access, what are they going to do? Unless they get like a 3-hour lunch break to go on a crappy bus system, they're not going to be able to get to the Friday prayer. Yeah. And then the other thing, again, from the Muslim perspective, is when we have funerals in the community, when Muslims do funerals, they happen within 24 hours. So you can't give people notice. So again, for the funeral, you may get a couple of hundred people show up. And you imagine if there's a bereaving family knowing that people can't come to see off their deceased, how are they going to feel as well? Yeah. In terms of solutions, I live in Easton, so I was affected when they closed off from All Hallows Road, despite protestation from the community. Yeah. But I think what we can learn from is St. Mark's Road, what they tried to do there, because there, they fought back tooth and nail, and the council actually backed off there. So I think we need to link up with them, learn from them, and push back properly against all of this that's trying to do. And I think that the last thing I've realised, because I've talked about this in other places before, this is really wound me up. Normally I'm quite a calm person as a Muslim chaplain, but one thing I've realised is this whole agenda, you know, liberal, whatever you want to call it, yeah, it seems like it's a small vocal minority making things convenient for themselves at the expense of the vast silent majority, and that needs to change. Yeah? And I think that the last thing I'll shut up after this, yeah, but I read a quote on the Nextdoor app, and I think that sums up the feeling of everyone. And this person said something, and it stuck with me ever since. Basically, they said, Bristol is becoming a difficult place to live in. Yeah. And I think that's the problem. They're making everyone's lives worse.
Right, unless anyone else has got their hands up, I think I'll start wrapping things up a bit. One more question. Last one.
Basically, I want to introduce us who we are. We're a new group we started about 3 or 4 months ago. We're a UK Community Awareness Project, and we're about raising awareness in our local communities. Justina, you've connected with us. Yes. It's good to meet you. So, yeah, we've got some leaflets if you want to come and grab one at the end. Thank you. That's all I needed to say.
Thank you. So as well as hosting this meeting to sort of gauge opinion, give people a voice tonight, we're looking to grow and strengthen the campaign, so please come and join us. We have clipboards available for people to add their email addresses to keep informed or to join the campaign. Please print your email addresses clearly in capitals. And we're looking for people to help with campaigning, social media, website and admin, including assisting residents to make complaints, etc. Please also make a donation if you can to help with the campaign costs. We're open to ideas, so if you have something to say but didn't get a chance to use the microphone, please come and talk to us afterwards. Thank you.
I just want to say a couple of things about what can be done. In Warrington, people organised, and like the gentleman just made the point about St Mark's Road, and they organised and they were vocal and they got out and they convinced their colleagues and their friends and their neighbours and their work people, and they got the LTNs ripped out and taken down. In Southwark, we've seen the same thing in London. In Ealing, we've seen the same thing. In Cambridge, we've just seen the councillor resign and a new councillor get elected because of the congestion charge. We're seeing up and down the country that people are saying no, that they're organising and challenging it. And that's what we need to do. They love it when we all say there's nothing that can be done. It's just a plan. It's just going to happen. We need to make sure we organise. So please come and see Chris and the rest of the team. I think the speakers have been brilliant, but I want to say thank you to everyone from Together's point of view. And let's get this message to everyone up and down the country. We're not going to put up with this anymore. We're going to organise. We're organising. We're fighting back. We're going to free our streets. We're going to take back democracy together. Let's all go to the pub. Let's carry on drinking. Keep meeting. Get involved here. Come on, Bristol. Let's do it. Let's make a change together.